Well, good evening all. Welcome, and welcome to those that are here physically and those that are watching or listening online. We've got a very interesting subject tonight. Brother David Herman is with us again, second in a series talking about the integrity of Joseph. So that should be a really excellent study. Well, we're going to read from Genesis 47 as an introductory reading. Reading from verses 13 to 26. Okay, so we look forward now to hearing Brother David, and he's talking to us about the integrity of Joseph. Thanks, David.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming along. It's much better to have an audience than have no one here, so I appreciate you being here. So, my first question for the night is, what is integrity?
Sorry?
What is integrity?
Honesty.
Okay, certainly a part of it. But hopefully we're going to come up with more than that. Anything else?
Singleness.
Singleness.
Ah, very important purpose. Word. Okay.
Upstanding.
Anything else?
Greetings or intention to fulfill one's word.
Ah, that's an important one. Anything else? Okay, what's a word that we normally associate mathematically that seems very much like integrity?
Integer.
Okay, integer. What's an integer? What's an integer? A whole number. Who was that? Sam. Okay. Okay. You deal with not just integer dollars, but all right. So we are supposed to be integers, which you used the word singleness. Right. So it's the state of being whole and undivided. That's very important. That means that we will be consistent, which we think we had. And there are a whole lot of ones associated with this. So we're driven by one motive. We're driven by one master, the desire to please one master. We have only one authority over us. We have one goal. It's only possible, I believe, to have integrity if you have just one master. If you have a second master, something else that's dominating your attention, you won't have complete integrity. But of course, the attributes that result from that are, as Stephen said, the quality of being honest. Most people would regard that it's a thing to do with morals, having moral principles, being honourable, ethical, virtuous, decent, fair, truthful, trustworthy, true to his word. True to your word, I know we had that one as well, loyal and fair. So it's a really positive quality to have, and we see that in abundance in Joseph. It's one of the reasons that there are so many chapters, so many verses about Joseph. I don't know whether you've noticed, but people in the Bible don't get equal amounts of time. Have you noticed that? And so if you see that there's a large amount of time or chapters or verses in the scripture, then that's a pretty good indication that that person has got a lot for us to learn, which is the reason why we're talking about Joseph. Right, some others, obviously King David, considerable amount of time devoted to him so that we learn from him, his attitudes and his approach. And when it gets even more serious, things get slower and slower, where every single verse tells us something new that's important. For instance, when we go through the Gospels, when it comes to the approaching crucifixion and the resurrection, you've just got every tiny little detail given to us. So God's saying, look at this very carefully, learn from this. And that's true of the life of Joseph. So Joseph was a man of integrity. And the thing that is surprising about that is that he has come out of a great deal of suffering. So what's our normal human response to suffering?
Complaint.
Yes, keep going.
Bitterness.
Yep, bitterness. Oh, that's a destructive influence. Sorry, James is going to run around. That was bitterness.
Not fair.
Yeah.
Not fair.
All right. People grumble that things are just or not fair. Not fair is the most common response. Sebastian's back there.
Sometimes if you've been through really tough times, like I hear anecdotes of like people that have went through the Great Depression and things like that, and they come out the other side and they're much more likely to hoard things.
Yes.
In terms of, you know, when there are things available, they'll grab them and hoard them for the in case more hard times come. But as you're saying, Joseph isn't doing that.
Yeah. But to broaden that out, basically we want to be more in control. We don't want to let other things take over our lives. So Joseph stands as a classic contrast to all of that. He's come out of huge difficulties. He's not negative. He is still a man of great faith. Right? He believes that God is in charge of it all, and he is still God's person. Believe it or not, I think he contrasts very strongly to his father. Jacob looks very ordinary in comparison to the character of Joseph. Now, I don't know whether you feel the same about that. I've spent a bit of time looking at Jacob and may spend a bit more time in the next 12 months doing that. But yeah, there are a lot of things that are not so positive about Jacob's ways of responding to things. So, where are we going to begin? Because I actually have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, about 6 things, I think, that really emphasise the integrity of Joseph. And that's pretty much, unless I am quite quick tonight, that's pretty much all we're going to talk about tonight. So, I think the first sign of the first sign of Joseph's integrity is in Potiphar's house. So we learn there that God was with Joseph and he became successful to such an extent that Potiphar actually could recognize that there was something supernatural about his accomplishments. He recognized that God was with him and actually made him successful beyond what would be naturally possible. So the response to that was Potiphar put Joseph in charge of his household. And God blessed Potiphar's house and blessed his fruitfulness in the field. So what kinds of qualities was Joseph needing to show that would result in such an elevation of someone who in fact was a foreigner in Potiphar's house?
Honesty.
Okay.
Trustworthiness.
Trustworthiness. Keep going.
Loyalty.
Yep.
Come on, Mark. I know you want to say something.
Integrity.
Very safe answer.
Reliable.
Very reliable, yes.
Ted is unreliable when it comes to the microphone usage.
Okay. So, I mean, there's a very wide range of skills. If you're going to run a whole estate, then that's going to involve a lot. So we've had some very important ones, and I'm going to add a few more. I think it was needed that he knew what was right and appropriate to do in every situation. You've got to handle a whole lot of different people, including a lot of servants, and manage them. So he had to have very good people skills. One important thing was that he wouldn't just take advantage of his position because that gave him a bit of power. And there's no evidence of that. In fact, throughout all of the life of Joseph that we find recorded, it appears that his servants have great respect for him. So he didn't lord it over others. He was always fair and reliable. He did exactly what he was told, and he was loyal to his master. And that was one of, or several of the things that were actually spoken of. And unfortunately, that came to a very sad end. And I guess we should look at that. Chapter 39. But you already know the story, so we might just move on with it, because I'm pretty sure you know exactly what's happening. So, where does it begin? To the end of verse 6. Oh, actually, we should go back to verse 6, because it says just how strongly Potiphar felt about Joseph's integrity. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and with him there, he had no concern for anything but the food that he ate. Now, that's quite an incredible thing, I think. The only thing he bothered about was choosing what he was going to eat. So presumably that means that Joseph looked after the, took charge of the kitchen in terms of making sure that was all happening properly. He managed all the servants in the house. It's clear from some of the verses there that he had some land elsewhere, so he was in charge of all of that, developing that and having workers out there. So Joseph being put in charge as a foreigner over all of those people was such a significant thing. But at the end of verse 6 we read, "Now Joseph was handsome and good-looking." Where do you think that came from? His mother. His mother was described as having been particularly beautiful. And even Sarah, back a few generations, was also very attractive. And this attracted the attention of Potiphar's wife. Now, I have a slight suspicion, and can't be absolutely sure of this, but I suspect that Potiphar, being a servant of Pharaoh, was a eunuch. So that may have made things a little more difficult for his wife. That she wasn't prepared to live with. So, and verse 7, "After a time his master's wife," Potiphar's wife that is, "cast her eyes on Joseph and said, 'Lie with me.'" And apparently, if you read the Hebrew, that is just over-the-top blunt. It's just three words in English, but in Hebrew it's just two words. She is very blunt about what she wants. But let us read on. "But Joseph refused and said to his master's wife, 'Look, with me here, my master has no concern about anything in his house, and he's put everything that he has in my hand. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except yourself, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great wickedness and sin against God?'" So let's stop and pause there. Now, I haven't counted that many verse the words there. She's used two words, and he's gone for three whole verses about why he's referred. No, sorry, two whole verses. His arguments are quite long and clear. So he regards this as an unthinkable thing to do. So, James, why was it unthinkable according to Joseph?
Because it was an offence against God.
Okay, there's number one. He would not do that to God. What's the second thing?
Oh, how bad do I feel not using the roaming mic?
Who was the betrayal?
Betray his master.
He would not betray his master. Okay. So, basically, he is totally unwilling to do this. But yes, and we have a couple of extra little things. He says in verse 9, this would be a great wickedness. A great wickedness. And it would be a sin against God. So, when he examines any temptation, what's his response?
Kerry's going to get an answer.
We'll get an answer. Come on.
It's no obligation to answer.
No obligation.
I'm going to answer that because no one else had.
Oh, what was the question again?
You're supposed to carry the mic, that's all.
Oh, Emily. Emily's
10 pointed at you.
Oh, that's. This is a tough job, this mic gig.
Okay.
Better than me. All right, I'm down.
And here's where we start to learn the lessons. His first thought is, what does God think of this? Any situation where we're not sure what to do, how does God feel about this? And we need to know that everything that we do that is a sin is first and foremost a sin against God. All right, you probably all remember David's response when he was caught in the act of adultery and finally owned up. In that psalm, he actually says that it's against you. You only have I sinned. And sure, he did sin against Bathsheba. He sinned against Uriah. But the key thing is he sinned against God. And that's the crucial thing. We have to make how God feels about things number one. I actually believe that that's the first sign of conversion, what's changing in our hearts. When we begin to feel when we begin to care about how God feels about things, then we are changing. And that's when the real commitment starts. So that's the key thing for him. But he not only sees the vertical sin, but he sees the horizontal sin. He cannot betray this trust that's been given to him, which he recognises as undeserved. So for him, it is unthinkable. It's a great wickedness. So he doesn't stop and think about it. He doesn't take on board that he has maybe a feeling of feeling flattered about this because he's attractive. He doesn't think, well, I've been through some really hard times. I deserve a bit of a good time. Right? He doesn't think that way at all. He made very clear, and just even more clear than her bluntness, that this is something he was never willing to do. And he put it very clearly so that she had no basis for thinking that he would soften or change his mind. So we have to be resolute when it comes to temptation that we are not going to do this. But that's not the end of the story. Verse 10. And although she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not consent. So we've got to picture this. Now every day he is facing this temptation. She's hoping to wear him down. And I think it actually goes further than that, because in verse 11, there's a clear inference that Joseph is actually literally avoiding going into the house if Potiphar's wife is there and there's no other men in the house. Because when she finally traps him, right, she's made sure that there's no men in the house. Right, and so he's been caught out. So Potiphar's wife took the opportunity and caught him by the garment, by his garment. We're not totally clear about what garment that is, but it certainly got used against him. And she tried to force him to give in to her wishes, and he fled, leaving his garment behind. Now we've got to think about that in terms of the garment. We have references to the garment that he had. It's a different garment, but previously. What was the previous garment that he had ripped off him? His multicoloured coat. Yeah. And so once again, he's having people who don't care for him taking his clothes. Now, I believe that this response of Joseph is set up as a biblical example that is followed through to the New Testament. Does anybody know what I'm alluding to? This is the way to deal with temptation according to the New Testament, and specifically this one. Trevor.
Flee fornication.
He knows the quote well.
1 Corinthians 6:18.
Wow.
It's in front of me,
Dave. Oh, okay. That's very impressive. Okay, but that's not the only one, but that's the most relevant one. Flee fornication. Now, so what's the best way to deal with temptation? Run away. How simple. Just run away and don't go back. But there's some other ones. When it comes to idolatry, what's the scriptures? You got this one, Trevor? 1 Corinthians 10:14? Give him a few seconds.
I've actually got 2 Timothy 2:22. Enthused about righteousness, faith.
That's my third one. Okay, just skip it. All right. What's that one then?
I've got enthused about righteousness, faith, love and peace with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. I don't know.
Verse 22?
Yeah, I got a 2:22, yeah. 2 Timothy. I don't know why it's coming.
Taking too long. Flee youthful lusts. Yeah, flee. Yeah. Okay. When it comes to idolatry, what are you going to do? 1 Corinthians 10:14. Same word. You're going to flee idolatry. So the scriptures are making it clear. This is how you deal with temptation. Run away. Get away from it. Because if you hang around, you get drawn in.
I didn't get softened. Until I was 40.
Okay. Now, we know the outcome of this. Unfortunately, Potiphar punished Joseph for a crime he didn't commit. All right, and I'm not going to go into all of the other details there. But his integrity is shown that day after day after day he resisted the temptation. All right, and his reward? He gets put in a dungeon. But I'm convinced that Potiphar didn't actually believe his wife. Because what do you reckon would have happened if he really believed that that had happened? They would have killed him. He was a man who was paid to do that. So I think that he was aware of what his wife was like. How long was he in prison for?
2 years.
At least 2 years.
It's
probably much more. Right. Did you pick that one up, James?
I had to do a long distance.
I'm sorry. I didn't leave you enough time. Okay, so at least 2 years, but probably much longer. And without God's intervention, it may have been permanent. So it's no coincidence that Joseph is alive and in the place where he will come ultimately into contact with prisoners of the king. So what happens when he's in prison? I'm assuming you all know the story.
He gets blessed again.
He gets blessed again. Why did he get blessed again?
What's could be given responsibility.
Four words?
I suggest you.
Four words?
Integrity.
The same four words we had last week. God was with him. Where was God in all of Joseph's suffering? God was there with him all the time. And so he was with him in prison, and he ensured that it was treated well. We're not told how or what happened there, but God intervened to enable Joseph to be put in charge of the other prisoners. Now, I would imagine that's a fairly unusual thing. I can't be sure. But once again, his integrity was evident even in prison. And so Joseph did everything that the prison warden would have done and trusted him completely, just as had happened with Potiphar's house. And once again, God brought him success in everything he did. And that's a deliberate repetition of the words in verse 2. Right? So God was with him. His integrity was there even in the prison. He's not sitting down, grumbling, complaining against God. He is holding fast to his integrity and to his faith in the most unlikely place to have found integrity. Trevor.
So this is like a training ground, because later he goes on to rule Egypt. So here he is, in a smaller sense, running the prison, which is bizarre in a sense, but it's a training ground for him, because later on these people are going to obey him. Yep. He's going to rule the country, literally.
What was God doing with Joseph? He was training him. What was one of his most important jobs going to be?
Vizier.
A manager of the whole country. And so he brought him through this suffering for the purpose that he had in mind. He would bring it for good in the long term. So he was giving another chance where he would actually learn more of how to deal with difficult people. And I would imagine that many people locked up would have been quite difficult to deal with. He was refining him and preparing him to become pure gold, which is what he wants to do with us. So we see that Joseph was not only godly when he was suffering, he was also successful and maintained his integrity. And I would suggest to you that it's actually much harder to maintain your integrity when you're actually successful than it is when you're suffering. Would you agree with that? Why might that be?
Is it because people are deferring to you, so it can inflate your ego?
Yep. You're likely to get quite proud. What else? Sebastian?
Increased pressure.
Yes, you're under pressure often as someone in charge. Yep.
When you've got everything at your fingertips, you're self-reliant. You don't need God.
Yep, that's very true. So many people just totally self-reliant when they're in charge.
You can have everything.
Hang on, Ted.
You can have whatever you want, yes.
You can have everything you want.
Right, including having a certain amount of power. Maybe not so much here, but when you're in charge of everything, you can easily do a few little dodgy things on the side. A lot of people will never know. So it's very hard when you're in charge. So in those difficult circumstances, Joseph showed his integrity to an incredible degree. Now, we don't know how much he suffered, but it clearly was a great deal. And he's an amazing example. But more is shown when he gets into the court. Now, I'm going to skip a bit of the story because you have probably heard it and read it a few times. Is that fair enough? Good assumption. I'm nodding ahead. It's good. Okay, so next I want to think about what he's like when he's coming forward to Pharaoh's court. But just before then, he was suffering in prison, and he notices that the butler and the baker who'd been put in prison by Pharaoh were out of sorts because of having had some dreams. What does that tell us about Joseph?
He watches people carefully and he can observe their moods.
He knows these guys well enough now to notice that they're not feeling happy. So he's sensitive to other people.
He's showing that degree of empathy and care for other people when he's in the sort of situation where a lot of people would find they've barely got enough care for themselves, let alone for others, whereas he's completely looking at other people, caring about their well-being, and has that empathy to see before they even say anything. Like, it's one thing if they said something to him and then he responded to them, but they didn't even say anything and he was already picking up that they needed help, which shows that from the start he was looking to help people rather than just looking at himself.
Exactly. People who have suffered a great deal develop empathy. It's one of those qualities that God brings out in people.
Good listener.
Yes. But he was looking, he was noticing. And that's part of being a servant of God, caring and noticing other people's needs. So he's in a difficult position. It's fine to have told the butler that he was going to be brought back to his position after 3 days. What did he do with the baker?
Had to give the bad news.
Hang on, Ted, hang on.
You're really getting the runaround.
He had to give bad news.
Right. He told him the truth. He didn't spin a nice story to make him feel better for the next 3 days, and then he wouldn't have seen him after things had happened. He actually gave him the truth because he was an absolutely honest person. And so he allowed that man the chance to prepare himself for what was coming. So an important part of integrity is to be absolutely honest in everything. I think Sebastian wants to say something.
Yeah, his actions here really remind me of this verse in Ephesians chapter 4. Which talks about speaking the truth in love as we grow up into Christ. And that's really what Joseph was doing here. So, and I think that's part of integrity, is not that he was just telling the truth. He could be like, oh, you know, sucks to be you. It's, you know, you're going to get die in a few days. He was more than just telling him the truth. He was telling the truth in love, and he was feeling for this man and saying, it's bad news, but this is, you know, I'm going to tell you in the best way I can because you need to know. But he really, you know, it's that balance, isn't it? It's not just some people can sometimes use the truth as an excuse to be rude or callous. It's like, well, it's the truth. But Joseph wasn't like that. He was like, it's the truth, but I'm going to speak it in love, which is exactly what Paul tells us in Ephesians.
That's a really important point. You know, we must not only speak the truth, we must speak the truth in love. Okay, so let's move straight on to in the court. Or even then, actually, before we got to the court, Joseph never considers himself to be the interpreter of dreams. If you read all of the story, he doesn't say, I'm going to give you the interpretation. He says God is going to give the interpretation. All right, in chapter 40, verse 8, which is over into the next chapter now, when he says to the butler and baker, do not interpretations belong to God? And the same integrity was shown before Pharaoh. Pharaoh had two dreams. You know this story well. The butler finally remembered Joseph told Pharaoh about him, and then he was called to Pharaoh's court. He changed his clothes and shaved, since the Egyptians were always clean shaven, which shows another little aspect of his wisdom in knowing how to go to that situation, knowing that looking ragged and so on like a criminal was not going to be a good thing to do. So he prepared for going to see Pharaoh. And 41 verse 16, and obviously we can only pick out a few crucial verses. Let's go back to verse 15. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I've had a dream and there is no one who can interpret it. I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Joseph's answer is, it is not I. God will give Pharaoh a favourable answer. And you'll actually see that again in verse 25, verse 28 and verse 32. Over and over again, Joseph makes very clear that all of the interpretations have come from God. It's not him. He doesn't have special powers. It's all to do with God. And when it comes to needing to recommend something, right, which is down at about okay, 34. Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt during 7 plenteous years. Let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming and lay up for the grain for the, sorry, under the authority of Pharaoh for food in the cities, and let them keep it. The food shall be a reserve for the land against the 7 years of famine that are to befall the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish through the famine. What doesn't he say? What doesn't he not even hint at?
It should be me.
Exactly. Now, I can't help thinking that he was thinking, God's prepared me for this, right? Surely I should just say I could do this, but he doesn't. He doesn't fall into the temptation of pushing himself forward, presuming anything. He leaves it up to Pharaoh to make the decision. Sebastian wants to say something.
Something that's just struck me quite powerfully is the real contrast the scripture has painted here between Joseph and somebody else who was in a similar high position in many later years, which is Haman, where both of them at various points were asked by the king. The king was like, oh, well, what should we do in this situation? And Joseph here is concerned about the welfare of the people. He's not presuming himself to be put into any position. He's just thinking about, well, what's going to be the most efficient way to save people, to help, and that he's really concerned about others. Whereas Haman later on, when the king asks, oh, what shall I do for someone who I want to honour? Haman immediately assumes, well, that's all got to be about me. It can't obviously be about anyone else. And with everything that Haman was recommending, with killing the Jews and all that, he was always thinking about himself and his own prestige and not thinking about the cost to the empire and the people and the king himself. Yeah. And so Haman was with his advice in this similar sort of position, was all about building himself up and his own wants, whereas Joseph is the exact opposite, and he's not concerned with his well-being and where he's going to end up, but instead concerned with, well, what is the best advice for the people?
Yeah. Good contrast, a good illustration of just how different that response was. So I believe that he's got absolute faith in God. If God's in this, it'll happen. And it did. And he was made the Prime Minister of Egypt and given great authority. But he carefully said to Pharaoh, it's not me. God will give Pharaoh a favourable answer. And he never said that he gave the interpretations. He never recommended himself. He just waited patiently. He's a man of incredible character, a real example. So Pharaoh acknowledged that Joseph was a wise and discerning man and suitable for the role. And he said that he had the Spirit of God, not using the name Yahweh, of course, but using the name Elohim. But he acknowledged that God was in this and had given him the interpretation. So he said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God? So Pharaoh said to Joseph, since you have shown all of this, there is none so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you. So he's come from the lowest position as a criminal up to the second highest place in the land. Sebastian.
Yeah, just while you're taking a drink there. Well, you were saying about Joseph being such a great example, and it really reminds me of one other young Hebrew man who found himself in a foreign country and really followed Joseph's example, and I think that would be Daniel, where everything Daniel does through those first few chapters of the book of Daniel very much seems like Daniel had Joseph in mind. He's like, well, I'm in this position. What scriptures can I turn to? What can I learn to know how to act in these situations? And at every turn, he's following the footsteps of Joseph, and very similar events happen to him with interpreting the king's dream and being elevated over the people. But, you know, it all starts with, you know, he wasn't aiming for that point. No, he was started with, well, what does God want me to do? What's this integrity? And he's following this example of Joseph's character and his integrity. He's like, no, I'm not going to eat these things offered to idols. I'm going to stick with what God tells me to do. I'm going to give all the credit to God in all the things that I do. And through that, he was then, God worked with him the same that he did with Joseph. And so I think that really illustrates to us what a example that God wants us to take from Joseph, because God then gives us an example of somebody following Joseph's example, saying, just really highlighting and underlined, yes, this is an example you are supposed to be following.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that one. That's a very good point to make. It certainly does seem like he was following that example.
So I think Paul alludes to that too. He's setting up Joseph and Daniel as an example, because he says that no man can know the things of the Spirit apart from the man to whom the Spirit reveals them, in Corinthians. Mm-hmm. So, and they were revealed to them, of course. It's a pattern.
The power of a good example, something we all should think about, that people are watching us and hopefully are learning good things from us. So, Joseph is now 30 years old. Apparently, he's now survived 13 years after having been sold into slavery. And then he goes on to do a massively good job of storing food, collecting so much throughout Egypt that it was impossible to measure it. And so now we look at him as prime minister. And I'm going to just give an overview here. He never presumes that he can do whatever he likes. He always checks things with Pharaoh, whatever he plans. One example is when eventually his family are going to come to live in Egypt. Right? Joseph had in mind that they would be in Goshen, and that's a fascinating thing. It was also some of the best land, but I believe in God's purpose, it was that they would be separate from the majority of the Egyptians because they needed to be away, I believe, from the Canaanites, who were having a terrible influence, not to mention the poor example of their father, but they needed to be separate so that they weren't drawn into idolatry, although it did happen to some extent in Egypt, as we learn in Ezekiel. So the integrity is also shown by the enormous respect that is shown by everyone in Egypt, including Pharaoh. Pharaoh encourages Joseph to bring all his family to Egypt and offers him the best land to live in. So he is highly regarded. And then I want to look briefly at the story that we had read for us in chapter 47, at verse 15. And we know that because it was read for us. And
sorry to interrupt, David, but I think there's a really good important point here at verse 45 in chapter 41. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paphnaiah, which means saviour of the world or saviour of the world or bread of life.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. It is a good point. Okay, so when the Egyptians had no money to buy grain and food, they begged Joseph to give them food to save them from starving. So what was his first answer to them? Do you remember from the reading?
Give me the cows.
And all the herds and everything else. Yes, all of the... He actually had them pay with their livestock, their horses, their flocks, their herds and their donkeys. Verse 15. Okay, because they'd run out of money. You know, that's what happens when prices skyrocket, when things are in demand. So what happened after they ran out of that? All of their herds were gone. In the next year, they came back and said,
"We have no money.
We have no money. We're starving. We don't want to die.
Our bodies.
And?
Children.
And?
Fields.
Land.
And their land. Okay.
Second row is dominating that series of questions.
They didn't know what to do. They didn't expect that they were going to get anything for free, so they begged Joseph to find a solution. So his solution was, okay, ultimately, Pharaoh will own all of the land. You can work it. You can have 80% of it and 20% will go to Pharaoh. And how did they feel about that? Did they think that was a terrible tax? Do you remember what it said in verse 25?
Jack O'Carey, you can do it.
He's refusing.
Okay.
What all that Joseph had done for them.
They were immensely appreciative and grateful. They said, "You have saved our lives." They knew they had no right. They were grateful, and he just was incredibly respected. So Joseph was in charge. He didn't write people off because they didn't have money. He doesn't take advantage of his power. There's no record of him ever using his power to get back at anyone, not Potiphar's wife, not the butler who forgot him, not even his brothers who treated him so badly. A couple of quick things. One more quick thing before some final questions for you to think about. Chapter 50, verse 1 to 14. And we don't have time to read it all, but Jacob died. He was embalmed. That was normally reserved for the pharaohs and the officials. So he was honoured simply because he was the father of Joseph. Anybody remember how long they mourned for him?
70 days.
More than 2 months, the Egyptians mourned for Joseph's father. And then when they learnt that he was going to have to be buried way back in Canaan, Pharaoh sent all his officials with him to go to the funeral. Who was left to run the country, I wonder? And he let Joseph's family go, even though they might have thought, oh, I'm going to stay here. And they had been looking after his flock, so he was running a risk, but he trusted them. And this massive entourage of all of these officials went to bury Jacob with his forefathers. And there's even a comment that by the Canaanites were absolutely shocked at this great caravan of people from Egypt. And they said this is a sign of the huge respect that Joseph had. Oh, no, that might be my comment, sorry. Right, so a couple of quick questions before I sit down and leave you to think. Does it matter what people think of us?
Yes.
Why?
Decisions. Yes, it does.
Pardon?
Sorry, you've got to push on.
Show integrity.
Okay. Why does it matter for us to show integrity?
God is with us.
It will show that God is with us. We are different people because we belong to him. But there's more to it too.
Our attitude reflects our on God.
Absolutely.
If we're doing the right thing, then people will think, well, they must believe something that's really worthwhile knowing.
Exactly. If we don't behave in that kind of way, in something that is different in a very positive manner, we are portraying God badly.
Over to Hugh.
So we can show Christ's character to the other people.
Exactly. They need to see, right? They don't just want to hear. They need to see what Christ is like. All right, so we are to be visible examples. It's a really great point. They need to see us.
With all these sort of points, it really is, you know, we care about what other people think of us, but the primary thing is we care about what God and Christ think of us, and then from there we spread those ideals to other people. So,
yep.
We can never put what other people around us think of us above what God and Christ do, because otherwise it undermines all those points that we just said.
Yep, absolutely. But the key point is we are not going to be effective preaching the gospel if, in fact, people have no respect for us. So, with no responses, just in your head, do you have integrity? Yeah, please don't answer that out loud. How effectively do you handle temptations? A little suggestion, especially for men. He's fleeing. All right. A suggestion I think that is very helpful is if you have a problem with a particular temptation, you actually share that concern or that problem that you have with someone you trust, a friend, and ask them to hold you accountable, talk to you regularly about that and see how you're going. And when you know that someone knows and will check up on you, then you are more likely to remain faithful to God. So, another question for you. Would others fully trust you to fulfill what you've promised or what you are expected to do at home, at work, ecclesially, and so on? That's a question for you. And a question I'm going to answer myself. How did Joseph maintain his integrity? He actually was in a very difficult spiritual situation all of the time. And I can only guess, but I believe he spent a lot of time talking to God about everything that he went through. For him, it was always about God. He never forgot God. It was always the forefront, the deciding thing in his life. He can't do these things because that would hurt God. And he wanted to maintain God as the most important person in his life, in everything. So he did not ever put that to risk. So I think Joseph is an incredible example of integrity that we can all learn a lot from. Thank you for listening.